So I kept going on silent retreats. We were living in Dallas at the time. And I started to realize that even though my external environment was very quiet and silent, my internal environment was anything but. It was crazy noisy in my head, the chatter that happened in my head. I remember one time I was laying on my back looking up at a cottonwood tree. The leaves were kind of dancing with the wind, and the blue sky of fall was up above me, and I was not feeling peaceful at all. In fact, I was feeling crazy. I felt the other night we went to Synergy, which I try not ever to do, but we did. And you're bombarded, you know, with the lights and the sounds and the smells and the people. And it's crazy making for me, at least. I do have some sensory issues, I will admit. But that's how I felt under that tree that day. And I realized I needed some new tools. I needed to learn more about not just creating silence around me, but finding it inside of me, an internal silence as well. So I started studying something called DBT, Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, that's based in mindfulness. And I also started learning from a teacher named Tara Brock. She's an amazing Buddhist meditation teacher and psychologist. And through that, I learned how to separate myself a bit from all that was happening in my mind. I didn't stop thinking while I was meditating. I still haven't stopped thinking while I was meditating. But the point was to not have to engage with my thoughts so much. So one way that I looked at it was as if there were boats kind of floating along a river. My thoughts were the boats. And I got to choose whether I jumped on board and ran down the river on the boat or whether I just watched it pass by and kind of let it go. One of the things that Tara Brock and another teacher that I love, Christine Walters-Paintner, talks about is having hospitality for ourselves, that I could notice the thoughts that were coming up and kind of say to them, you know, thank you. I don't really need your help right now. If you could go sit over there and be quiet for a little while, that would be great. And I'll let you know when I need you if I'm, you know, being chased by a tiger or something, and I need my responses to kick in. So I learned that space between myself and my thoughts. There's another wonderful teacher named Cynthia Bourgeau. Some of you probably know her. She's written lots of books. She's also written a book called The Heart of Centering Prayer, and she has practiced centering prayer for, I think, more than 30 years now. And she talks about the neurology behind centering prayer too, and that it's in coming back to the silence that our neurotransmitters and our neural circuits are changed. It's not necessarily about keeping silence all the time in our minds while we pray or in our world. It's kind of like in the study of music. It was the contrast between the sound and the silence that brought the changes in our neurology. And Cynthia talks about that as well, that it's in the coming back to silence that we are changed and transformed. I have definitely experienced that in my own life, that there is this greater expansiveness, this greater opening and awareness, an ability to pause that wasn't there for me before. I spent the summer reading a book with a friend called The Divine Milieu by a French Jesuit named Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. And it's a wonderful and very complex book. I really enjoyed reading it. And Teilhard talks about our constant evolution. He is quite a philosopher and a paleontologist. He was, as well as a priest. And he talked about evolution in our spirituality, in our biology, in our relationships, really across the board, that there's this ongoing evolution that is constantly happening and held within and by the divine. His equation is that awareness plus response equals consciousness. And that is definitely something that I found in my own life. haven't experienced my dad as being here, it might make me cry to talk about it. We were having a particularly difficult time in our family a couple of years ago. Mental illness, our not understanding exactly what was going on, FASD, all kinds of brain differences brought a lot of pain into our home, into our life. And gosh, you're making this, Dad. My dad came over just to say hi one day in the midst of that. And I was walking him to his car to say goodbye. And he said to me, Lynn, I don't know how you do this. I don't know how you survive. And I said, you know what I do? I look for beauty and I hold on to it for my dear life. And I realized that it's my practice of silence that allows me that awareness. Sometimes it's a tiny, tiny thing. Maybe it's the new yellow blossom on the, Natalie, what is it called? Gold, yeah, Esperanza, gold something. I'm leaving out a word, but maybe it's that, the first bloom that I see. Maybe it's the feeling of the cool air on my skin, you know, when the wind, thank God, changes from hot to cool, and you feel that for the first time. Those tiny moments. Today when I got here, I had to go out into your incredible garden and clip some flowers and bring them in. It's those little tiny things that keep me going. And the reason I can see them is because of the silence in my life. My kids have an amazing way of letting me know. They'll say, Mom, I think maybe it's time for you to go on a silent retreat, you know, because I'm not as compassionate. I'm not as kind. I'm not as patient. I don't have the pause that I need to love. And that's why I have a practice of silence. There's a quote by Teilhard that I think there's a slide of as well. Oh, yeah, there it is. So this is in the notes of his book, but he says it toward the end of his life. He says, throughout my life, by means of my life, the world has little by little caught fire in my sight until a flame all around me, it has become almost completely luminous from within. And for me, the silence in my life is what gives me the ability to be aware of that luminous divine presence that fills everything within us and all around us. My kids are definitely my spiritual directors. They are my spiritual guides. They are beautiful and full of life and amazing and all have neurobehavioral conditions and lots of challenges and bring a lot of challenges into our home and our life. And that forces me to continue evolving. It forces me to grow and learn and become more of who I want to be. And for me, that is the way of Jesus, who I follow. That is the compassion, the love, the justice, the peace that I want to be a part of in the world. And why I like being here with you guys, because I think you guys are really, really good at that. I'm leaning into the balance of contemplation and action again in my life. So I am doing training and consulting and support of people who are affected by neurobehavioral conditions. And I'm also leading some contemplative circles and doing some spiritual direction as well. So Emily and I have planned a couple of days where I'll be offering a contemplative circle, a different kind of contemplative practice in the coming week. I think there's one on Tuesday and one on Saturday. There's a sign up in the foyer that I think Harry mentioned. If any of you are interested in practicing this for a little bit, maybe you're curious, maybe you've had a practice of meditative silence and you want to come back to it. Maybe you have an ongoing practice and you just want to come join a group for a while. It may be something that we do in an ongoing way here at your church. Or not. We'll see what everybody wants to do. I do have some other contemplative practices too that I usually post on Facebook. You can look at my name on Facebook and see what's happening there. It is incredibly transformative and leads us to the place where we can be our truest selves, where we can be all that we want to be. So I'm going to invite the bell to sound again for us. This time I'm going to leave a little bit of space, a little more space in silence. When your thoughts come to distract you, be kind to them. Let them know you don't need them right now. And then I'll ring the bell again to close out our time together.